Jeremiah chapter 28, please. We're going to look at the first four verses of Jeremiah 28, and then we'll look at the first 10 verses or so of chapter 29. For everyone's information, I sound like I am really sick, and today I feel better than I have in 2 weeks. It's just whatever's left over that I haven't spit on somebody, so Tim, you're it this morning. It's coming your direction. Let's stand, please. As we stand, the entire sermon this morning will require that you know small pieces of biblical history. Yes, believe it or not, you just can't open the Bible any place and magically find a verse. Here is the backdrop. You'll quickly pick up on the backdrop when we read the verses. After godly King Josiah died in 609 BC, Israel was long gone in the north, the 10 tribes. The 2 tribes in the south and remnants of the others went downhill quickly. And you go through a quick series of kings. In 606 BC, or thereabouts, Babylon comes to Jerusalem and takes away a small piece of the royal family back to Babylon. You know that by the guy's name, Daniel. That's 606 BC or 605 BC. A few years later, 598 BC, Babylon comes back again and takes away a much larger group. The middle class, most of the royal family, most anybody that was important, including Ezekiel. So the book of Ezekiel takes place entirely in captivity. So you have Daniel, and then you have Ezekiel. 606, 598, or 605, 597. We're going to pick up somewhere after 598, 597. Two captivities have happened. There is a remnant in Jerusalem and in Judah. Jeremiah is still there. So let's look, and we'll begin in verse 1. And it came to pass in the same year, in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the fourth year and in the fifth month, that Hananiah, the son of Azur, the prophet, which was of Gibeon, spake unto me in the house of the Lord in the presence of the priest and of all the people, saying. So we now know the last, look at me folks, the last king of Judah is on the throne. His name is Zedekiah. In 586 BC, after this, Nebuchadnezzar will again come and destroys everything. Zedekiah, which never listened to God one single time, he'll not even go into captivity. The last thing he will see is his sons, and Nebuchadnezzar will have his eyes put out and him killed. Zedekiah is prototypical of people who do not listen to God. So that's the period we're in, from 598 to 586, closer to the 598. Verse 2, this prophet comes to Jeremiah and says, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saying, I have broken the yoke of the king of Babylon. Within 2 full years will I bring again into this place all the vessels of the Lord's house that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took away from this palace and carried them to Babylon. And I will bring again to this place Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, with all the captives of Judah, that went into Babylon, saith the Lord, for I will break the yoke of the king of Babylon. A man stands and says, God told me to say this. God is going to defeat the Babylonians, and our people are coming home within 2 years. Verse 4, and I will bring them again to this place. Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Well, I think, have I already read that? Yes, verse 5. Then the prophet Jeremiah said unto the prophet Hananiah, in the presence of the priest and in the presence of all the people that stood in the house of the Lord, even the prophet Jeremiah said, Amen. The Lord do so. The Lord perform thy words which thou hast prophesied to bring again the vessels of the Lord's house and all that is carried away captive from Babylon into this place. Nevertheless, hear thou now. For time, we won't read any more. But what he basically says, look at me, friend. He basically says, I wish this were so, but it's not. You're lying, and you're going to die. And Hananiah dies at the end of this chapter. Chapter 29, verse 1. Now Jeremiah writes a letter to the people in Babylon. He's in Judah, in Jerusalem still. He writes a letter to those people, and that's what we're going to pay attention to this morning. Now, these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem unto the residue of the elders which were carried away captives, and to the priests and to the prophets and to all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. After that, Jeconiah the king and the queen and the eunuchs and the prince of Judah and Jerusalem and the carpenters and the smiths were departed from Jerusalem. This is Ezekiel's captivity, okay? Verse 3. By the hand of whatever this poor guy's name is, Elasa, the son of Shapham, and Bill, the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent into Babylon to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, saying, here's his letter. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives, whom I have caused to be carried away from Babylon from Jerusalem unto Babylon. He tells them what to do. Build you houses and dwell in them, and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take you wives and begat sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands, that you may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. And seek the peace of the city. We're talking about in Babylon, yes? Seek the peace of the city whither I have caused you to be carried away captives, and pray unto the Lord for it. For in the peace thereof shall you have peace. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets and your diviners that be in the midst of you deceive you, neither hearken, don't listen to the dreams which you cause to be dreamed, for they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, saith the Lord. For thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. Years ago, I spoke on this passage. This morning, I'm going to be much looser. I'm not going to do a real professional sermon because we're going to have a conversation about this. We saw, in one way or another, an inauguration. And I don't know what you call what happened after that. So at best in America today, at best, and by the way, the media loves this, there's division. There's tremendous division in this country. Is it as divided as it's ever been? I told somebody this recently. I don't think they got the point. There was a Republican man that became president, the first Republican. I think it was worse for the first Republican. I think we had a civil war. I think his name was Abraham Lincoln. But may I say this, we live in uncertain times. Ade just got back from Cameroon. When you read that verse, and in the peace of the city in which you dwell, you will have peace. Is this true, Ade? What's happening in Cameroon? The two English-speaking provinces have very little electricity, water, internet, telephone coverage, and basically chaos. So I want to say this to all of you, whether you're a Trump supporter or a Trump hater, we need to pray for something more in this country than what we have today. And frankly, even if you're a Trump supporter, you cannot, as a Christian, support his massive ego. Can I get an amen? On any level, the arrogance. And by the way, I'm not saying he's the only one. We live in strange times. When the pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas, one of the largest Baptist churches in the world, that's been there since the 1800s, they said when he was supposed to speak at the inauguration, he is a very, what was the term they used? He basically said this, the pastor of that church, Mormons are not Christian. By the way, Mormons are Mormons. They're not Christians. He also said that, this is shocking stuff, gay marriage is against the Bible. Jesus is the only way to heaven. And the media was portraying that pastor as being like a revolutionary person. Where have we come to in America? So I'm going to speak on this morning. I hope I can help you and help us a little bit. Let's pray. Father, I thank you that we have the privilege of meeting to this point freely. Obviously, just seeing the craziness that went on around the inauguration, I can't figure out for the life of what burning buildings and burning houses and burning cars and burning things and fighting the police have to do with a righteous indignation against an inauguration. But we have much division. I would like our church to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. I would like us to not to back away from the arrogance and the pride of maybe some of us think we won, whatever that means. Because we certainly are not in the millennium yet. And on the other side, I would like us to understand why you have us here at this time in history. Father, speak through your word this morning. May we walk away from here understanding your word as it applies to our circumstances today. And more importantly, how we are to take your word and apply it to our lives. This we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. The year, I believe, was 2003. And my wife and I were on the first and only vacation we've ever had the opportunity to go to the country of England. We were in the south west part of England, and we had found a church for Sunday morning in the province of Devon, I think they call her, Devonshire. We were going to go to church that morning, but we didn't really realize the church was about an hour from us. So we got up and we got there on time and went to church, and frankly, it was a nice church, Reformed Baptist Church, good preaching, good teaching, good music, enjoyed the worship, enjoyed the church. And at the end of the service, Jenny and I had both agreed we were going to go back to the place we were staying, but we were going to come back for Sunday night. That doesn't always happen on vacation. I have a rule. If I go to church on Sunday morning and if I have to suffer, I'm not suffering twice. You know, I can suffer through crazy music one time, but the second time I'm not doing it. But this was good music, good preaching, good Bible-believing stuff. So Sunday night, Jenny and I came back, enjoyed the services again, enjoyed the people. And there was a young couple visiting at the same time we visited. Now, obviously, when you're in England, your accent doesn't sound British. Robert, when your brother was here from England, his daughter, I couldn't get my head around that British accent coming out of a Filipina's mouth. It was like, I kept saying, just talk. I just want to hear that come out of your mouth. It just sounded so weird to me. They knew we weren't from around here. The other young couple was from East Anglia, which is one of the, whatever they call them in England these days, one of the areas of England. After the service Sunday night, Jenny, I'm sure you remember this, after the service and fellowship, whatever else we did, we walked to the parking lot with them. Do you remember? We were talking to them. They were a nice young couple. I think they were probably in their 20s someplace, hadn't been married too long, had good conversation. They obviously were Bible believers like we are. We talked about a lot of different things. And during the conversation, it became very obvious this young couple were very afraid. You see, England is much further down the road away from Christianity than America, if that's possible. England has less Christians. I mean, Bible-believing Christians are just a minutia over there. They have less Bible-believing churches. Average Bible-believing church would be 30 over there, except a few in London. You go out into the other areas and 50 would be a big church. Most of the people are nearly as old as Frenchie. Now, I'm being funny, but I'm not. The people are all old. They're good people. We even support a young man that's working in Wales because the churches are dead over there. This young couple was very afraid. There's been massive immigration into England. And by the way, this church is an immigrant church. We have no problem with immigration, but you do have a problem with a nation when you have too much immigration of a different, totally different religions. And in England, some areas have been taken over by Muslims or Hindus, where you cannot publicly be a Christian in England. And they were very afraid. It was obvious they were afraid. And in our conversation, we talked about lots of things and really enjoyed them, actually. And they told us, and I'm not giving you the words, I'm giving you the gist. They said they were debating whether or not they should ever have children because of the nature of the anti-Christian culture in England. They thought maybe they just wouldn't have children. Now, most of you are younger than me. That is unbelievable. When I came here, I was 39. Now I'm almost as old as Stacy. My friend, you cannot imagine. In the morning in our Christian school, Brian, where Brian over here, or Pastor Koch, reads a Bible verse and prays. When my older sister went to public school in Southern Illinois, the principal read a Bible passage and prayed the Lord's Prayer over the intercom in the public school in America. 1962, 63, 64 was the beginning. It was the beginning, and Christians were sleeping with their fingers far, excuse me for being gross, I'm doing it deliberately, with their fingers far up their noses, more interested in what they're eating and what they're watching on TV than anything else. In the 62, 63, 64, where the Supreme Court decided, now you understand, from 1620 until 1962, everybody thought it was good. But some brilliant people decided it was unconstitutional. What about the people for the previous 300 years? That no longer could you read the Bible in the public school, and no longer could you, the principal, pray the Lord's Prayer in the public school. That was eliminated. What people didn't realize, it also eliminated God from the public school. I don't need to tell you, 1973. Look up here. I'm in high school. I'm on a bus. People are talking. We're debating abortion. And all of a sudden, that same group of morons called the Supreme Court, they again found in the Constitution abortion rights. And they didn't even ask your opinion. They just decided what the law is. Because, you know, you've read the Constitution. Who makes laws? Well, the Supreme Court. Haven't you read that? By the way, the same thing in 1973, what you probably don't know is the American Psychiatric Association also voted, and they had a literal vote among all the psychiatrists that were part of this organization on whether something would be considered an illness or whether it would not be considered an illness. And it was voted that it was no longer, they didn't use the term illness, and my mind's not working on that. They used another term, and they decided that it was no longer a psychological illness. Does anybody know what that was? 1973. Homosexuality. But it took many years for that to come into the forefront. Well, I don't need to tell you that in the year 2013, with the blessings of the president at the time, we now have marriage equality. I always thought we had marriage equality before, but we had some Supreme Court justices that are so intelligent that nobody in American history understood the Constitution until they told us what it meant. And that we went right back to sleep on. By the way, some of Trump's victory, don't kid yourself, is directly in reaction to that foolishness. So if you don't like Trump, understand there's a whole bunch of people that understand ideas, and they understood if Hillary got in the Supreme, she would put Supreme Court people in, we would never have any trace of Christianity in America after Hillary. Now, I'm not saying, by the way, I'm not a fan of Trump. I'll tell you what I think of him in a minute. Fact is, I'll do it now. But before I go there, I think in this room and in our country, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of dread. There's a lot of confusion. There is a lot of extreme anti-Christian ideas every place you go. May I say this? We're used to it now that we don't need, when I go to another country, and in the Philippines, I find that pastors are invited to teach at secular colleges. I'll never be allowed to teach. I will not be allowed, but you don't know why. Because we have gradually become secularized. We've compromised. We don't know what to do about it. So you say, Pastor Warren, what about this Donald Trump? How do you like him? I'm going to tell you exactly how I like Donald Trump. Are you listening carefully? If you ask me, do you like Donald Trump? I'm going to tell you this. I like Mike Pence. Did you get what I just said? I like General Mattis. I like General Kelly. And I think Trump has a good-looking family. Do you like Trump? Ego, 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 and mouth. But the hatred we have seen in the last few days, you listen to me, that hatred is not about Donald Trump. Because from my understanding, Donald Trump is not against gay marriage, and he's not against abortion. So what's the hatred about? The hatred is about the remnants of Christianity in this country. There is a large group of, did you see the signs? Well, they don't show you the signs. They show them at a distance because you don't want to read them. They're so ugly and hateful. So we now live in a country very divided, with many Christians not sure what to do, very confused. So what do we do? I'm going to give you three broad premises. I want you to look at chapter 29 and verse 4. By the way, I'm going to give you three broad premises and three simple ideas to take home with you. The first thing we must come to, Christian, I'm going to speak into Christians this morning, is in verse 4. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives. Notice the language. I hope you get the language. Whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem unto Babylon. So Jeremiah writes a letter, and God speaking through Jeremiah says, I am the reason, Judah, that you are in Babylon. So a part of this, my friend, has to be this. We must accept where God has brought us. I don't like where we're at. There's things about that I despise where we're at. I don't desire, frankly, to take the some laws from the Old Testament and impose them on America. America is a country under a constitution. We're not a Christian nation. But we have to come to grips as this is where God has brought us, whether directly, indirectly, whether God has allowed us to come here, this is where we are. We're here. I have in my office, I can show you it. My mother graduated from high school. It was a 3-year high school, 1949. She gave me, can you believe she still had her graduation thing, a little brochure. She said, Ralph, you can have it. I said, Mom, I don't want your brochure. I'll make a copy. I made a copy of the brochure. In the brochure, they had a baccalaureate service. This is a public high school in Eldred, Illinois. The baccalaureate service was in the First Baptist Church. And the pastor of the First Baptist Church spoke a Christian message. And they sang songs. The songs that the unsaved people had to sing was How Great Thou Art was one of the songs. Yeah, we're a mess. We've come a long way in this country. The songs that our kids sing in this school for Christmas is the songs that Mike and I sang in the public schools in junior high school. Now, oh no, you don't call it Christmas, it's holidays, winter session, the winter solstice, who knows? But may I say this, please look at me. It's where God has allowed us to come. You cannot fight this. Look at me, there's two things you cannot do. You cannot go back to some golden age. Can't get there. We're here. God never tells us, try to get back to whatever date. There is no golden age we can get back to, and we cannot scoot forward to the millennium. I'll just tell you this, another statement about President Trump. President Trump is not the Antichrist. Neither is he the Christ. And we need to keep it separate. So if you hate him, he's not the Antichrist. And if you love him, which I doubt if anybody does, he's not the Christ. Folks, here's where we are. He's our president. Here's where we are. We all must come to accept where God has brought us. If you look with me to verse 8, chapter 29 and verse 8, I'm just going to give you two broad principles right from the text. We must accept where God has brought us. The second broad principle is don't be deceived or buy into any utopian dreams. That if we could just get this man in the White House, we would have heaven on earth. Look at me, friend. I believe in the millennium. I believe there is coming a day when the Son of God will rule this world in righteousness. There will be no more stupid. There will be no more wars. There will be no more hatred. There will be no more harm come to people. But my friend, we better be careful that we don't get into this thing of, man, now we got the man here. We got rid of Obama and all of his. And by the way, whether you liked Obama or not, you have to admit one thing. He had two problems, three that are obvious. The most anti-Christian president in American history. Number two, I mean, these are kind of obvious things. He doesn't know who our friends were. He denounced Israel in the UN. He did it. Folks, Israel, England, Germany and Japan have kind of been our allies for a long time. But he loved Iran. He loves Cuba. You see, he doesn't know who are. He never figured out who, well, he did. He was a liberal, and he that's what he believes. So I had a little bit of a problem with his anti-Christian stuff. I had a little bit of a problem with him not knowing who our friends are. And my friend, whatever's happened in Syria is 100% Barack Obama's problem. He couldn't be man enough to say, it's time to do something about the murder and the mayhem. That's on him. Now hold on. What's Trump going to be like? Have no idea. You say, are you afraid? I've already told you, I like Mike Pence. Look at verse 8. Some of you aren't used to hearing truth like this, by the way. Everything I said is absolute factual. There's no debating what I just said. By the way, he had a lovely family. I can give Barak that. Good-looking wife, good-looking girls. Look at verse 8. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets and your diviners that be in the midst of you deceive you, neither hearken to your dreams which you cause to be dreamed, for they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, saith the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you. So basically, Jeremiah told these people two things. He first of all told them, you got to get a hold of the fact that God brought you here into Babylon. You've got to accept it. You got to come to grips with it. You got to quit fighting it. You just have to accept it. And secondly, don't listen to people saying, if we can get this person in the White House, all of our problems go away. Friend, I don't care who you put in the White House. Last I checked, we're still sinful people. And until Jesus rules and reigns from Jerusalem, we're going to have struggles and divisions and problems. But what I want to do now is come down to the specifics. Would you read with me? Look with me in verse 4, 5, and 6. Now here's what you can take home today. What can we do? What can we do? Look at verse 4. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives. Now, we're not captives, but we are here in America. And Ade, I'm going to address you because you were just in Cameroon. It broke my heart when I got that news. I got the news from the Barillas that, you know, that the English-speaking provinces were cut off. And, of course, in Wednesday night, I would hear it from Zeban, and from Linda would talk about it too. Everything I'm saying here is true for Cameroon too. Nothing changes. It doesn't make any difference where God puts us. The same truths apply, and there are three of them. So the Lord addresses us in our present circumstances. And what does he tell us in verse 5? Build ye houses and dwell in them. Plant gardens. Eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters. And take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. My friend, I think the first take home is this. We as believers must come to this place that we enjoy God's bounty where he has placed us. We enjoy God's bounty, God's goodness where he has placed us. The couple, and I'm just summarizing, look at me, the young couple that said, I don't know if we want to have children in England. I understand that. There are places in England where you cannot fly the Union Jack. It's considered, the Union Jack, the English flag, because in certain areas in England, it's considered racist. It's like having the American flag. Racist? It's just the American flag, which I think is supposed to represent all of us. I understand that, but look at me, friend. Hey. The first step is the heart is for some people is difficult. And I don't mean by this, put up your feet. I'm not talking about go home today, put your feet up, and watch some more television. The passage talks about living your life and enjoying what God's given you. He says, go back where you're at. God put you there. Enjoy it. Plant. Apple trees, I'm making this up, in America where I'm from. Plant peach trees, plant cherry trees, plant gardens. Grow them, enjoy them. Get married. Have your children marry. Have a life. You know what's sad? In all the division in America, Americans have done, in of all varieties, do more and more of this. We withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. I think some people, Pete Vasilovich told me, we were talking this week, and I think he's right. I think there are some Americans that never talk to anybody except someone exactly like them. This is one of the few churches in America where you see people of different ethnicities. We went to a black church in North Chicago. Nothing wrong with the church. And you go there and you expect everybody to be black. You go to so-called white church and everybody, it's like, what's wrong with us? Because we're living a life where we don't want to hear anybody that disagrees with us. We want to hide out in our holy little huddle and just kind of... And God has a different view. He says, you know what? Hey, go into those cities. Enjoy your life. Build those cities. Make those cities prosper. Build your houses. Build your farms. Do things that make a life. Don't quit living. But unfortunately, do you not get this? Are you not with me? I have met people, person after person, and I realize we don't talk to anybody except people that talk like us. So all the Trump people only talk to Trump people. All the Hillary people only talk to Hillary people. They don't know anybody else exists. In the state of Illinois, do you realize there's over 100 counties in the state of Illinois? Do you know how many counties voted for Hillary? Less than 10. What about the rest of those counties? Where are those counties at? Well, I'll continue. I would recommend, my friend, that you quit struggling to settle down. Enjoy the bounty, God's bounty, in this life. In Waukegan, we have a wonderful lakefront. Enjoy it. We have good bike paths. If you like to ride bikes, ride it. We have tons of cultural history in Chicago. There's a Ukrainian museum, a Swedish museum, a Lithuanian museum, a Slovak museum, a Polish museum. There's an African American museum, and there's 20 others that I can't name. There's the aquarium. There's the big museums. We even have baseball in this town. You say, how do you know that? Because the Cardinals come here and play sometimes. Other than that, we have so much to enjoy here. And people withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. And the next thing, the only thing you see a person is with their stupid TV looking at it. That's their life. And we have it all right here. God does not interest, look at me, He's not interested in Christians shriveling up into this little corner of the world where you only talk to people who look like you, smell like you, and think like you. He wants you to have a big world view of things. There's a place called the Volvo Car Museum. Phil, you ought to take your wife there. Don't buy any cars, though. They have cars that are old, almost as old as Frenchie there. They probably have a Batmobile out there. Mike, is it true? It's an all day. If you've never been to what have you been doing with your life if you haven't been to the Volvo Car Museum? It is a great time, and I don't even like cars. They start back where cars start back with, you had to crank them up. And some of them, I mean, they have everything, all the way to modern cars and all kinds of cars from movies. We have Ravinia. We have the Lyric Opera. Turn your Bibles to a text, would you please? 1 Timothy 6. Would you look there with me? Let me say this, friend. Hatred, and there's a lot of it. Can I ask you a question? Do you agree there's a lot of hatred in this country? You know what eliminates a lot of hatred? Look at me in the eyes, everybody. Quit talking to people who look like you. Find out there's other people in the world. You might actually learn how to think. It's unbelievable to me that some people never, ever communicate with anybody except somebody that looks and smells like them. What's wrong with us? Learn to enjoy this world. God says, you know what? I took you from Israel or Judah, and I put you in Babylon. When you go there, don't go to sleep. Don't hibernate. Don't hide out. Build houses. Build farms. Plant vineyards. Grow things. Get married. Have children. Have a life. Enjoy God's bounty where He has placed you. I'm going to read one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Now, I might not be a good fundamentalist. You know, in some circles, a fundamentalist is this. And by the way, we have at least two of these churches close by. No fun, too much damn, and not much mental. And I don't like any one of the three. I'm a different kind of fundamentalist. I'm a biblically driven fundamentalist. This is a passage that you need to grasp in your heart. 1 Timothy 6:17. I'm going to quote it. I don't need to read it. Charge them that are rich in this world. That's you and me. By the way, and if you don't think you're rich, I have no words to say for you. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God. Notice the last phrase. Who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. You say, how do you break down division? Be one of those people that you have so many interests and you are so in you are enraptured with the goodness of God. I think the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. And if this is God's world, whether he puts me here or he puts me there, I want to enjoy all of it, all that I can, and all the people, and I don't want to hibernate. Sorry that I'm interrupting some of your conversations. Hibernate behind a television. Or only talk to people who vote like you, think like you, smell like you, and eat what you eat. The biggest problem we have in America has become television. Not because it's all bad, but because it makes us, look at me, individual. We just can't realize there might be someone else. Well, I come to the second point. Jeremiah 29:7. Would you look there with me, please? I have said enjoy. These are the specifics. Enjoy God's bounty where he has brought you or where he has placed you. Jeremiah 29:7. In a day when I wrote this, I thought specifically also of Cameroon because it breaks my heart that there's good people there suffering. But part of what God calls Christians to do is this first line. He says, seek the peace of the city whither I have caused you to be carried away captives. Look at the very last line of that verse. The word for in the peace thereof shall ye have what? So I would say this, God put us in America at this time in this place to enjoy God's bounty where he has placed us. And number two, to seek more of God's bounty where he has placed us. And by that, I don't mean more money for us. My friend, if there's one thing Christians ought to be, we ought to be the people that are the most interested in encouraging, lifting up, building up, pushing forward people, because we recognize something. How this country goes is how we go. And the peace of this country, by the way, I have to stop. Peace. Peace is not this. When I was a kid, you know, everything was peace, you know? Peace. We're not talking about that. Shalom actually means two things. It means the absence of the negative and the presence of God's blessings. So when you seek the peace in this country, we're seeking God's best, his bounty, his blessings for this country. I want that in your life. I want that in your children's life. I want that in your grandchildren's life. And to our ability, we are to seek more of God's bounty where he has placed us. Why? Because in the peace thereof, in the bounty of wherever you're at, that's where you're going to find your blessings. Ade, I don't know what's going on in Cameroon exactly or why. I don't know the details like you guys do. But I do know this. If there is wrongdoing on some English-speaking people's parts, many, many, many good people are suffering. Because the only way we either all flourish or really none of us flourish in any country. And my job and your job is to be seeking God's blessings for this country. Now, how does that work? Proverbs 14:34. Would you look there? Proverbs 14:34. Enjoy God's bounty where he's placed you. Build homes. Plant gardens. Plant orchards. Develop jobs. Develop a life. Get married. Have children. Have grandchildren. Enjoy all that God gives you. Secondly, seek more of God's bounty in the place that he has put you. Because the more of God's shalom, his peace, which is the absence of war and debt and disasters and threats, and it's the presence of God's blessings, the more of those blessings that our country enjoys, the more we enjoy. And the less our country has, the less we're going to have. Proverbs 14. I believe it's Proverbs 14 and verse 34, is it not? Righteousness exalteth a what? But sin is a reproach to any people, young people, and not so young. Please look at me. Pastor Warren will definitely talk about things you don't want me to talk about. If you come to this church, please hear me. You're going to hear this man preach against drinking alcohol. You're going to hear it until I die. Do you know why? Because Pastor Warren doesn't want you to have any fun. No, actually, I want God's very best in your life. I'm going to kick every parent in the behind if they allow their children to fail in school. You say why? Because I want every child to have every possible opportunity. Because the more all of us experience God's goodness, the more I experience it. My friend, this is righteousness exalteth any nation. So the more sin and perversion we have in a culture, are we going to be better off or worse off? Righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Makes no difference who they are. So my job and your job is to enjoy God's bounty and seek to increase God's bounty. You say, what else might help you there? Well, there are these things. I know you've read them, called the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor thy father and thy mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not covet. I'll say this, and I'm going to close with a third concept. Look at me in the eyes. You find a person that's a thief and see how they're doing. You see, we're going to preach righteousness in this church because we want to take everybody's fun away. I'll just say this. Not everybody was there Friday night. Not everybody could have been there. There were too many there anyhow. I had so much fun Friday night, I thought there was a time that I might have gone to heaven in between. When I saw Louie and Cliffy do what they did, it was so funny that I thought if it went on much longer, I'd just have a heart attack and go right to heaven. Please don't talk to me, look at me, about you Baptists never have fun. No, we don't need to get drunk to have fun. We don't even need to smoke pot to have fun. And we have the kind of fun when you wake up the next morning, you don't feel guilty. I will confess, sometimes when I wake up the next morning, I do feel fat. But I don't feel anything else. And can I look at me in the eyes? And you know what? I'm going to influence you, and I want you to influence our culture, because you know why? Because in the peace that we enjoy, which means the absence of war, famine, debt, and all of that, and the presence of God's blessings, the more that our nation has, the more we have. That's the way it works. Now I'm going to confess to you, the third part's hard, and I'm going to confess my sin. Are you ready? I have to confess my sin. I know you don't have sins like this, but I do. Look, if you would, back to Jeremiah 29, verse 7. He gives us really broad, in very specific terms, the three concepts. Go out, build houses, plant vineyards, get married, you know, have children, have them marry, have grandchildren. which is this whole idea about enjoying, you know, God's bounty where he's placed us. And then he tells us in verse 29, seek the peace, the shalom of God, God's blessings, and none of the other stuff. And by the way, friend, I don't care where a person's from in America. If any way I can, I want every single American to enjoy all of God's blessings. Everyone. And then he says, whither I have caused you to be carried away captive. And then he ends with this, and pray unto the Lord for it. I would say three things. Enjoy God's bounty where he's placed you. Number two, seek for more of God's bounty where he's placed you. And number three, pray for God's bounty where he has placed you. Until 2013, the man you're looking at prayed for our president. I can say that personally, I never prayed for Barack Obama after his lies about gay marriage. May I say this? That's wrong. Did you hear me? That is wrong. Because God commands us to pray. Specifically, for more of God's shalom, peace. It's not enough that we enjoy it. It's not enough that we promote it or seek it. It's we must ask the God of heaven for. And by the way, this isn't nationalism. This isn't just for America. Because Ade and Young, they have family members in another country. And Sonia, I'm pretty sure you guys have family members back in Belize. By the way, it's the same. This doesn't change wherever you live. I want God's blessings on those countries. And I want the people, and my job, it is my job and your job to pray for those in leadership. Now, turn your Bibles for a last text, and we're done this morning, to 1 Timothy 2. It is very interesting. I'm going to give you another reference that you can write down. It's the weirdest reference. In Ezra chapter 6, part of Ezra was not written by a believer. It was written by the pagan king. Did you know that? And the pagan king told Ezra, well, it wasn't Ezra, it was before Ezra. He told them, and he says this, Ezra 6 verse 10. He says, this is what I want your people to do, that they may offer sacrifices of sweet savors or aromas unto God, the God of heaven, and pray. He's asking the Jewish believers to pray for the life of the king and of his sons. You say, do you like Trump? I like Pence. Is that clear enough? But it is my job that maybe God would bring some humility. Hello? Sane? I don't know if he's sane or not. It's hard to know in between the Twitters. Where did we get to Twittering when you're 70 years old? Isn't it time to shut it off? But here's your job. When you go home today, look at me, friend. There are truly people worried. Don't take their worry as you're a bunch of liberal Democrats. Maybe they are, but they are concerned for their future. Are you not concerned for their future? It's your country. Pray unto the Lord for the place where God has placed you. 1 Timothy 2, verse 1. I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all that are in authority. Does this sound like Jeremiah, the next line? That we may lead a what? Quiet and? Wow. A quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Friend, when you go home today and for the next weeks, look at me. There is division. Some of the division is a bunch of knuckleheads. There's a small group of people that just like to burn things. I don't know who they are. Some people, there's a conglomeration of people worried. Some of them are Democrats, they're liberals, and they think that's the solution to America. Then you got a group over here, but I'm going to say it. You don't have to like this either. There is a small sliver of wild white idiots, white supremacists that like Trump. I don't like them. They're not part of who I am. Is that clear? But hear me. You and I have a job to do. Let's start enjoying the bounty that God's given us. There ought not to ever come out of your mouth complaining. You live in one of the greatest areas on earth. You have everything. And you're griping? More than that, seek God's bounty, the shalom of God, the peace of God on our nation, and pray unto God for more of it. Because, friend, we don't need division. Look at me. We don't need martial law. We don't need military in the streets. Because in the peace that we all have is the peace that I have. And if we all don't have it, none of us have it. Let's go forth and do so. Father, thank you for your word. These are precious